You are listening to The Pilgrim on the 405 with Will Crist. Join him as he and his guests discover how businesses thrive in California.
Well, welcome to The Pilgrim on the 405 on this early part of the fall where it's just beginning to get a little cooler. I want to welcome to the show Morgan Christen, who is the CEO and Chief Investment Officer of Spinnaker Investment Group, who are having a tremendous run here in Orange County. So welcome to the show, Morgan.
Thank you, Will. Appreciate it.
So I understand you guys recently moved into new digs, right?
We did. And it's interesting because part of the reason for our move, obviously we love our space and we love our landlord, but our prior space, the whole floor, two of them, in fact, were taken over by WeWork. Uh-huh. So as we watch what's happening with WeWork, we kind of watch and laugh as they're somewhat imploding there. So it's an interesting deal.
Excellent. Well, I found WeWork was very helpful to me because I needed to have a space for a session while our session room here was getting ready, and it was helpful.
Oh, it's a great concept. I think it's an absolutely great concept.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about what Spinnaker does in Orange County, and hear a little bit about what's going on with businesses in Orange County that you advise.
Sure. So Spinnaker Investment Group is a boutique investment advisory firm. We handle individuals up to businesses. So on the business side, we are doing planning such as 401k plans, pension plans, a lot of stuff that makes sense with the new tax laws. So with our businesses, we are helping them for tax reasons, saving tax and 401k plans, but also empowering and helping their employees by allowing them to have a 401k, allowing them to start saving and building for their future. I think for a business to be sitting there and all of a sudden they have all of these employees that can't move on because they can't retire is a bad thing. So we try to get plans in place for them to start beginning the process of saving and getting retirement plans and getting assets put away for some of their employees, as well as the owners.
Some of my clients, manufacturing and educational clients, things like that, where there's a large number of people, I have found it's very helpful to have some people come in from time to time and just talk to the employees about saving, about how do I make a budget? How do I pay attention to what comes in and what goes out?
That's absolutely true. And we do that a lot also, because you're right on the manufacturing side. We talk to people about what debt looks like. I mean, if you take on too much debt, what does that mean? What does it mean to save a little in a 401k plan? If you put away your Starbucks money for every week for 30 years, what does that look like? It's a real number. So we talk to them about that. But yeah, the one thing they don't teach in school is basic budgeting. And I think a lot of people have troubles with that. You have to, whatever comes in, you can't spend more than what comes in, and people have that problem.
Right. Well, it's just been very helpful. And also the employees begin to understand that leadership teams really care about how they live and what their financial status is.
Absolutely. And you know, if you look at the statistics right now, I mean, you see that car loans, there's now 30% of car loans are 7 years plus. And that's because when you go to the dealer, they're selling you on a payment. And so they're fitting you in the payment. And a lot of these people really appreciate that education because, you know, they flip their car in 7 years. They keep rolling over that debt and they're never digging out of that hole. And it is absolutely a great thing for an employer because we're in there educating, and it's another benefit. It's a benefit that these people really appreciate.
And what I have discovered is that the more that employee believes the leadership team cares about not only the product or the service that particular employee provides, but also cares about the well-being of the employee, the more loyal they are.
Absolutely. That's right. The more you can bring them in The more they feel like they're part of the business, the better they'll do. They absenteeism goes down, waste goes down. Absolutely. Anytime you can do that, it's absolutely great and beneficial for your business.
Yeah. I mean, and that's, you know, that's the heart of EOS, is helping everybody in the company, top to bottom, understand exactly where the company's going, how it's going to get there. And then to begin to recognize that, that the one or two measurables that they have actually helps the company get to the overriding vision. And
absolutely,
how exciting is that?
It's true. Yeah, and it's kind of an abundance mentality. You know, if you treat your employees like that, you, in the end, you will do end up doing better.
Right. Well, so talk a little bit about what you see about the attitude, not just of the CEOs, but of the leadership, and the, what do you see out in the companies that you're working with?
Well, it depends on level. So usually if you have a visionary, someone who started their own business, a lot of times those folks are very good at being fair to their employees, having good benefits, adding to the 401k. If you start getting levels there where the company is smaller, however, the leader's not as involved, and you're going down into management levels, I think a lot of them are trying to protect fiefdoms, you know, so they're trying to protect what they have and they don't share as much, and it's felt in the rest of the working population there. So generally, if it is a with the owner and that visionary, if he's still around, they're usually well-run corporations.
What do you see right now as the attitude looking forward for these companies?
As far as the economics and
economics would be one, but just in terms of optimism versus pessimism.
Yeah, that's a good question. So it depends on where they're at. So meeting today with someone that's in the software business, and they're well, not software, but it's more internal parts to computers and whatnot. They're seeing it slowing down. I mean, this trade war is slowing things down. People on the service side are seeing things doing quite well, it's if not picking up. So it depends on where they're at as far as their business is concerned, about their feelings. So anyone with a service is feeling pretty good. Anyone with a product is not as optimistic.
Interesting. Now, one of the things that I've been looking at is how do we make businesses in Orange County better? Not how do we sell them something, which, you know, a lot of times vendors and service providers have that mentality that they can help everybody and they're trying to sell something. But what would it be like if we had, say, a program to be the best, and we were looking for 1,000 companies to get committed to that? What do you think we could do to help with that?
Yeah, I think that's a top down mentality. I was listening to Arnold Schwarzenegger the other day, and he came into the country here, and he went into bodybuilding. He said, "I don't want to just be Mr. America. I want to be Mr. Universe." And he said, "I don't want to be just an actor. I want to be a leading man." So I think it's taken it to that level. Any business you go in there as a leader, you want to go to that level. Our business is we work with clients, individuals, and we want to have the best service for those people. We want an absolutely great experience. So it's from the top down. Just lead by example. Great service, great business, and just strive to be the best.
Do you think that there are things that companies could learn, or leadership teams could learn, about how to be better than they are?
I think a lot of times what you can do, if you're comfortable with it, is send out surveys to your clients or, you know, your end users, and keep it all, you know, no one has to know about it. And so they know that they can give some honest feedback. And, you know, we've done that. You got to feel the pulse every now and then, because maybe something you think is great, they don't care about. However, something that you're really not paying attention to is something they'd really like you to look at. So I think that that's a great way to check with your end users to see if you're doing what you think you're doing.
Now, one of the things that I've been fascinated with is when we look around Orange County, we are really blessed with some very strong, great leaders, economic leaders, who have built great companies, but many of them are 65, 70, beginning to look at what do I do next? Mm-hmm. Companies being sold, and sometimes they move to Phoenix, Texas. And it's not just leaving California. I mean, they're actually turning the company over to somebody else. And now, which causes me to wonder, how are we beginning to identify, engage, nurture those 40-year-old CEOs right now who will be, for the next 20 years, those powerful, strong, contributing leaders?
Yeah, with a lot of our businesses, we start talking about succession planning early, because that's absolutely right. You don't want to do it at the end. We notice on our side, in our business, someone that does something like us, financial planning, the older you get, the less your business is really worth, because then people say, well, are these people going to start leaving? Because for us, if I'm 65 and my clients, clients are going to start asking me, when are you retiring? So you have to put a plan in place. And we always talk to our companies about that. You're right. Some of their managers in their 30s and 40s, but for the company owners, they really need to start talking about this in their 50s. They need to find that person that's going to lead this. Maybe they can start doing a process of share purchases or through ESOP plans and employee stock ownership, something like that, where they can start getting that buy-in. Because again, stickiness, you're going to create a very good employee because now they are owners, and then you're putting in place that ownership. Plus, you need to start putting in place their ability to purchase the business, because you go to sell to a third party, who knows what you'll get for it, and who knows who stays around and where your clients go.
Right. So that's a big part of being the best for Orange County is helping the existing strong businesses here to maintain themselves here. So that might be part of what we want to look at is how do these 1,000 companies that we've identified, what is their succession plan? What are they doing? What are they expecting? What's their 25-year plan, their 10-year plan?
Absolutely, because a lot of times that's the creators, it's their baby, and it's really tough for them to give that up. But you're absolutely right. I mean, if they want this their baby to continue on, they need to start doing that. They need to start looking at succession planning. And as you said, a 10, 20, whatever year plan, because then they can understand all the stops along the way. This is how it's going to unfold, and this is how it'll be. Because ultimately, then you're not coming up to the end of it, and you have to sell this thing, and there's a disconnect in what the value is and what you're going, what someone will purchase for.
Well, and if the company identifies what its core values are, then that's who they are. One of the saddest things is a company that has a very strong culture gets purchased and just completely subsumed by a company that has a totally different culture.
Right.
I mean, that's a big disconnect.
Big disconnect, and your major employees go away, and maybe you sold it as some sort of an earnout. Now all of a sudden the revenue goes down, and your income goes down, and it was absolutely the wrong fit, and maybe because of health reasons you were forced to sell. It might make a lot of sense to do an internal sale at maybe a discount, but in the long run it'll probably be better.
Well, and so getting really clear about what our core values are, which are already there, right? It's simply getting them articulated, and then getting really clear about where are we going? What is our plan? How often I've seen two or three people at the top having some sort of foggy plan about maybe what's going to happen, and we hope, but moving from that to this is where we're going. Now, could we change? Absolutely. But right now, today, this is where we're going. And then sharing that with everybody in the organization, even the vendors and customers, ultimately, right?
Absolutely. That's a great point, because vendors, customers may realize that, no, I don't know if these people have a plan, and they may stop doing business with them. And that's absolutely right. You have to have that vision. It's all spelled out so that customers can continue buying, vendors can continue to sell to you, because there is a plan. We know that there's a plan in place, not only for the succession, but they should also be looking at buy-sell situations. You have two partners, one dies. All of a sudden, does that other partner want to go in business with the other partner's spouse? So all of those, they should lay it out in a complete plan that says, here we are.
Yeah.
We are, if should something happen, we have contingencies.
And once we know where we want to go in the next 5, 10, 15, 25 years, then we can, you know, so often that visionary that you mentioned, that visionary has a picture and they think it's very clear, but it's when somebody else wants to articulate it, it becomes very foggy.
And so
getting to that, you know, like taking a 3-year picture, which we can see, and painting that picture in Technicolor so that the visionary gets his or her ideas out and everybody else can see it.
Absolutely. Because then if they don't see that, you have maybe your lead salesman or woman, maybe your lead engineer, all of a sudden they're just, what's going on with this guy? He's quiet. He's not talking about things. I don't know where things are going. And you know, they're susceptible to leave the business, which would be a major impact on your revenue. So absolutely, everyone needs to see that vision. They need to see that clear path as to what their job will be in the future.
Yeah, and once you have that 3-year picture painted, then out of that, it becomes very clear what we have to get done. Not the 30 things, but the 3 to 7 things that we need to really get done this year to make that happen.
Right.
And then we can look at, you know, at what we got to get done in the next 90 days, because to me, that's about as long as we can go without getting frayed and confused. So
yeah,
getting together and holding ourselves accountable for what we said we would do, and then setting those goals again for the next 90 days.
And what you said there is accountability. That's absolutely right. Because if you do, this whole plan will blow up if you put it all together and all of a sudden you just fail to do those things. You say, well, I'm not really ready yet. You have to go along with it. Once that is in place, I'm going to sell 15% of the firm in 10 years to you. You have to stick with that.
Yeah.
And once that plan is in place, yeah, you're absolutely right. People get on board, but you have to stick to it.
Now, one of the things that I find that I'm discovering is that leadership teams sometimes spend a lot of time trying to figure out how to do something. You know, the marketplace changes. We want to have increase our sales. How do we do that? Or manufacturing has a new technology. How do we integrate that? Now, my belief is, at least what I've learned from Dan Sullivan, who's my coach, that it's not a matter of how, it's a matter of who. Because if you get the right who, that person already knows how.
Right.
Do you find that to be true in your business?
I think that's absolutely right. If you're back to the visionary, you may not be working in an area, or you may not have your finger on that pulse over there. So you absolutely have to have all the input from other people, because you may be going down the wrong road. And there's someone that knows it. They see the changes, be it they're younger or they're working in a different area, and they may know it. You have to listen. Everyone has to be a participant.
Yeah, there's a shift from, it seems to me there's a shift from those brand new enthusiastic startup companies where the visionary, the founder, is doing everything. And then it seems like the first move is to hire some assistants to help him or her do everything. And they come in every day and say, Coach, what do you want me to do next? Right?
Right.
And as the business grows, then there comes a time when that visionary is going to go crazy or limit the business. I've seen some businesses owners just say, we're not getting any bigger than this because I can't control it.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And if they are going to grow, then they have to start finding people who are experts, who know how to do it, they're professionals. When they agree to do something, you know it's going to happen.
Yeah, and that's absolutely right, because then they're empowered. If they're experts, they're empowered. You will listen to them, and you can't have a bunch of people just following along, because you're absolutely right, because now you're 10 years down the road, and you're scrambling, because the business has shifted. It's all on you, and you may not have the vision for the next 10 years.
Well, and also that founder, as the business grows, is spending more and more time trying to corral everything. And 60, 70, 80 hours a week, they're not having fun anymore.
No, and you're right. I mean, any small business, they're doing a lot of stuff. They're the IT person, they're everything.
Right.
And so that's absolutely right. They're not having fun with it anymore. You got into this because you want to break away, do your own thing, but then you're like, man, I guess it is okay to work for someone else. I don't have to deal with all this.
Yeah, but if we could just teach them how to build leadership teams that take responsibility and are accountable for what they said they would do with their common plan. And that, to me, is a major shift for companies that are in that growth stage.
Absolutely, because then you're sharing vision. You're sharing the avenues you're going to go down. It's not all on you. Yes, you were the one who initially did it, but now you're bringing on other people that have other thoughts and other visions, and you may level up to such a level, you know, such an area that you never thought possible, and that's because you have other visionaries.
All right. So let me ask a question. Given those things, if we were to take, you know, use Hoover's or Zoom Info or something, and find a list of companies in Orange County that have 10 to 250 employees, and we could pick out whatever niche we want. If we were to pick out 1,000 of those companies, in your experience, what do you think on a scale of 1 to 10, those companies would be, given the kind of things we were talking about just now about being the best? Where do you think they would be?
Oh, being 10 being best?
10 being best.
Oh, gosh. I'd say you're probably an average, sixes.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably 6 to 7 range.
Do you think it would be valuable, worthwhile to engage those companies to the extent that they want to be the best?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that would be valuable to engage them in some sort of educational experience? I mean, we got tremendous, significant ways of shipping information in. Do you think Do you think that would be helpful to Orange County?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, this is a hub down here. I mean, there's a lot of businesses down here in a lot of different areas, and that would absolutely help them.
I think that would be that's something that's been on my mind for a couple of months now is not just getting a couple of new clients. That's, you know, we both know we can do that. That's going to happen, right?
Mm-hmm.
We don't have to spend a whole lot of time trying to figure that out. But if we could expand the scope of what we offer and get really clear that we're here to make Orange County a better place. It's already a great place. Let's make it better.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, 1,000, that's exciting to me.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. Well, let's keep talking about that. Now I got another question for you. Tell me a little bit about, let's think about Spinnaker.
Yes.
So if we were meeting here 3 years from now and we were looking back and you were really pleased, and what would have to change personally, professionally, business-wise for you to feel really happy with your progress?
Oh gosh. I think our progress has been pretty good so far. And I think what we need to do is never get complacent. All of us need to continue growing our business, continue with our service level with our clients. And so I think as long as we stay on that track, I'll be pretty pleased 3 years from now.
All right. Anything else other than complacency, avoiding complacency?
Gosh, I know. I mean, I think that's it. That's you start earning at a certain level, or you start growing at a certain level, and you become you're okay with it. And so, mm-hmm. our business, once you get to a certain level, you become a different type of business. Now, we have about $330 million under management. You start getting up to $500-700 million under management, and now all of a sudden you're in a different world. You have to bring in additional people. You have to bring in additional advisors, and so. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the trajectory we are on. But I think that you can sit back and say, well, I'm what I'm earning and what we're doing is fine. But complacency to me is one of our biggest threats.
All right. So that's one of the biggest dangers, mm-hmm. is complacency.
Yeah.
So what can you do to avoid complacency?
Well, we started doing, you know, some of the things we talked about just a few minutes ago about succession planning and all of that. I've incorporated. I mean, I have multiple partners now, and we've done that because we want those that are involved, that are generating revenue for us, that are building our brand, building our name. We want them part of the process. We want them motivated. So we've started some of that process. I'm the oldest in our group.
Oh my goodness. Oh, yeah. I don't even see gray hair there.
There's a few, but so we're trying to build a generational, firm here. You know, we have me in my late 40s and we have 30s, 20s. And so we have someone who's graduating college and that we're bringing in. So we want to bring that in, and I want all of them to feel like they're part of it. Because you know, they're part of the process. At some point, part of ownership, because you know, like we said earlier, they become they're just a great employee at that point. They're trying to grow the business. They're doing everything in the best interest of the business. Again, back to waste, back to time off. They're here. They're involved.
I'm not hearing any of the accepted millennial whines about all of the millennials.
So we get that. We have brought in a couple of them, and we have absolutely had that trouble, and that is title. They want a certain title, but we're regulated. We can't give titles until people are registered. Income, I mean, we can't give out a lot of income. This is we're fee-based. I mean, the fees come in, that's how you earn. And the grind. I mean, a lot of them do not want to do it. There's going to be some phone calls. There's going to be some late nights. You may have to go to some networking events quite a few times during the week and in the evening, maybe some things on the weekend. And we've brought a couple in, people that reached out to us that wanted to join us. They sold us on them and they didn't make it. So that was absolutely a problem. Now, two of my partners are millennials. And so it's like, you know, they're a different breed, and they're out there and they get it. They like the freedom for this business. I mean, we're not 9 to 5, you know, so they enjoy that freedom.
So it might not be millennials in general. It might be there are people who have certain desires and they don't fit your culture or the particular business model.
Yeah, because I mean, our business, one, you have to get out there and hustle, but you also have to have, for me, as far as I'm concerned, and all of us agree to it, is that you have to be client centric. Our client is first, always will be. If it's less income, whatever it is, that's fine. It's client first. And so we have to look for both of those. I mean, you might have someone out here that may want to hustle, but they're just saying whatever to get the client, and that doesn't work. Mm-hmm. In a world. So there is that. There's a combination there.
So a lot of hard work, but focused on the client.
Mm-hmm.
What are some opportunities that you see out there for Spinnaker?
You know, and one of the biggest is that there are a lot of smaller firms that would do well merging in with us and or selling to us. There are a lot of people in our business. I just sending out some statistics earlier today. There's a lot of people in our business that are 55, 60 plus, and they're retiring. This business is, they do not have succession planning. Some of them are on their own. They have their own business. They never gave up shares to anyone else. All the things we talked about earlier are all problems we see with some of these other advisory firms. And so our opportunity is that we can go in there and help some of these groups and acquire and you know, build up our business in the process.
Uh-huh. Okay. And now, how do you go about doing that? I mean, is that a campaign? Is it somebody you stumble across in a networking meeting?
Yeah, it is. There's websites and stuff like that. But for those that we have found and that we've worked with, it is meeting someone. It is being involved with the Financial Planning Association. And it is really just bumping into someone. You get along with them. You start talking with them because they've worked with these clients maybe 20, 30 or more years. And they want to make sure most advisors are, you know, good people. And they want to make sure their clients land in a great place. Where can I still work with the folks? Where can I kind of merge in? And so, yeah, you end up meeting someone, you have coffee, and you have some synergy between the two of you. It makes sense. You like how you do business, but it is a lot of times just bumping in.
Mm-hmm. Now, without getting, you know, too precise, but you're talking about moving from 330 to 500. Mm-hmm. What part of that would come from the growth that you guys make? And what part of that do you see coming from acquisition?
Right now, it's 100% from our growth. Mm-hmm. Acquisition is out there. We've talked to a few firms in the past that didn't fit. We've done some little things in the past. But right now, it's 100% our growth. And we're not, our forecasting and planning doesn't assume we're going to buy anything. That's just more gravy for us, because I think you lose sight and you start chasing another group and all of a sudden you go, well, there's our next 100 million, and then it falls apart. So we're focused on just internal growth, and then all of that will just be, you know, that'll be great.
Great. So what about opportunities for this organic growth? What do you see as particular opportunities that you have out there?
Well, frankly, right now the markets are starting to, and they've done really well this year, but they're getting they're bouncing around quite a bit. There's concerns out there with recession. You know, it's like an airplane, right? So an airplane, a two engine, one of them, the manufacturing engine shut down, and it's a consumer that's pulling this plane along, and it's sitting there, and some economists talked about this. It's we're flying at stall speed. We're not dropping below, but it's a stall speed. So it's time to review with folks out there. They need to see what are they paying as far as costs in their portfolio. What is a manager charging? What are the funds charging? And do they really have a plan? Some of them are getting close to retirement. Should they be still as aggressive? Are they there? So we do a lot of what we call a second opinion service. We'll look at your portfolio, we'll put a short plan together for you, and just see if you're on track. Do you understand your risk? Do you understand everything you're doing in your portfolio? And a lot of times we find out that they're not. It's like climbing Mount Everest, right? On the way up, all the deaths and accidents happen on the way down.
Ah.
So that's when you look at retirement. Fine, just save. You don't really pay attention to stuff. You're at that peak. Now you're going to start taking income. Now you're no longer working. There's no revenue. And that's where people can get in trouble, and that's what people are now concerned about.
Ah, okay. So what are the strengths that you have at Spinnaker?
I think the strengths that we have is that we have a lot of things in-house. We manage the portfolios in-house. We work with Charles Schwab. So the buck stops here. Morgan, why do we own XYZ stock? We'll have an answer for you. Two, we're independent. We are not tied to any firm. Again, we work with Charles Schwab. We can buy any stock or bond within there or mutual fund.
Charles Schwab there talking about how much are you paying?
Yeah. Yeah, he just got rid of all commissions.
Right.
Yeah, so we are an independent, and we're planning first. We put a plan together, because how do I make a recommendation unless I have a plan? We also have a network of folks we work with. So we end up being the CFO for our client. They come in, they need a trust attorney. We have trust attorneys they can speak with. We don't do it in-house. However, we have some they can work with. CPAs, all of those different areas, we can put it all together. So they have basically a one-stop shop, and our clients call us for just about everything, because we end up being that person they can bounce ideas off of. Should I buy a car, rent a, or lease a car, you know, buying a house? We don't do mortgages. However, we have templates so we can show them what the payments will be. So that's our advantage. We're trying to do, we're their CFO. We're everything to them.
It's a real client-centric
absolutely
project.
Absolutely. A lot of investment management firms are, they do a great job, but all they do is invest the assets. That's it. Well, you got to look at everything else. You have to take a global look.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, what do you see prospects for Orange County?
You know, Orange County in California, we tend to lead in everything. And so I think the prospects here are still great. We have great businesses, great companies. Yes, our real estate is expensive. However, you look back in 1999 versus 2019, you can buy almost $500,000 more of a house because interest rates are so much lower. So, you know, it's still a great place and people want to be here. You can't, where do you find coastline like this? Where do you find weather like this? So it's, they can, Washington or Sacramento can throw all kinds of things at us and it's still a desirable place to be.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right. I have this dream. I've had this dream for 10 years that there would be, 40, 50 CEOs in the room of companies in Orange County. And we would bring in various service providers talking about what's coming in terms of taxes from Sacramento and then what's it going to be like with the job market and all of the things that they're worried about and right. Lay it all out, right? When that's over, I'd see myself standing up and saying, well, there it is.
Yeah.
Now, you got a choice. If you want to move, I grew up in Texas, so I know the governor will take your call. In fact, there's phones right out there that you can use.
Right.
On the other hand, if you're like the people that I work with, we're going to get together and we're going to figure out, learn how to deal with all of the things that are coming about, and we're going to thrive.
Absolutely.
And I think that's where we are, right?
I would completely agree. That's right. We're not giving up what we have here and we'll figure out how to work within it. And as you said, thrive.
That's right. So what we're coming to the end of our time here. What would you like to say to folks?
Well, I'd like to say, a lot of things you said, we talked about earlier. I mean, it's a great place to live. It's a, you know, where we are right now, but I think we do need to go out there and do better and build better businesses. I mean, keep businesses here. Small businesses are really the heartbeat of America. And we need to keep these businesses. We need to keep them going. We need to build out all that succession planning because, you know, right now you see companies like Apple, all these big companies are acquiring a ton of these businesses. So there's less and less. We're almost going back to this monopoly world again, where there's just a few companies. So we need a lot of great, strong businesses. And I think what a great place to begin that movement here in Orange County and just keep it strong.
Good. Well, that's wonderful. So glad to be with you. And I'm convinced that this is the first of many conversations that we're going to have.
Great. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Good. Well, there you are. And just another way of talking about how to make businesses in California and especially in Orange County thrive.
You've been listening to The Pilgrim on the 405 with Will Crist.